tons of big storylines going on with the Cleveland Browns. Have you heard about this? Have you seen about this? Have you heard about this? Deshaun Watson, not very good right now. Yeah. And the Browns in general, not very good right now at 1-4. And so we've got sound from Berea. We'll play within the next couple hours here. But we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline and welcome on former NFL head coach Ron Rivera. He's going to be on the call of 49er Seahawks on Westwood One alongside Kevin Kugler tomorrow. You can hear that game right here on 92.3 The Fan. Coach, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing all right. Long time. It's good to hear your voice here. And one, how's the media venture going here? Because I know you're not just with Westwood One. You're also on NFL Network. You're like Seacrest. You've got like six media jobs now.
Well, it's been interesting, I tell you right now. And the best thing is it keeps me involved in the league.
Yeah, that, hey, it's great to hear. It's great to see your success. So we're talking a lot right now with the Browns, not just about Deshaun's performance, but we're talking about some things that people consider more elementary, like communication, calling out blitzes, missed tackles on defense, penalties out the wazoo. How much of this is on the coaches and how much of this is on the players for a team like the Browns that's a veteran team?
You know, based on what you just said, them being a veteran team, you would not expect that to happen. But sometimes, and be honest, when things go bad, they go bad across the board for everybody, not just the players and the team itself, but also for the coaches. I mean, it's rough. It's tough right now. Expectations were very high. I know Kevin Stefanski's a heck of a football coach, and he's shown it, but sometimes things just don't work out. Things get tough. They get hard, and everybody's searching for an answer. And one thing that we've always tried to do, and I try to do, especially in Carolina when we had success with it, was go back to the basic fundamentals of what you do, the X's and O's of football. That's what I think, these guys, really need to do, in my opinion, is just get comfortable again. Get back and do what they've done best in the past.
At what point, though, if you're Kevin Stefanski, do you look around and say, our offensive line is one of the worst in the NFL right now, we don't have the weapons, Deshaun isn't going the way that we thought it would go, are they at the point where they say, enough with Deshaun, we make a move, or do you stay with Deshaun and try to really navigate through what could be a higher ceiling than maybe what Jameis Winston would be?
I think what you have to do is navigate what could potentially be a higher ceiling. Now, a couple things playing to this right now. Do you really truly believe you can win? If you do, as Kevin Stefanski believes he can, then he's got to go with who he believes can get him there the most. Because right now, the players are looking for the coach to react and do something. If you do something because you're trying to do your best and you want to put the best players out there on the field, the players buy into that stuff. And again, this is about now them as a football team thinking they can
win. Rivera, Westwood One, NFL Network, former NFL head coach in the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. One of your former guys, John Allen, who I remember him being Jonathan Allen, but apparently we're now back to John. But that's okay. That's a choice. We're allowed those choices. But he went on the Fan in D.C. and said it looks like to him that Deshaun is battling things above the shoulder, meaning confidence issues and other things like that. If it is confidence, how, as a coach, teammates, like, how can you help a player when they're struggling this severely with confidence issues amongst other issues?
What Jonathan said, or John said, really, it's coming from, a player's perspective. And there's some things, some insights that we as coaches don't get to hear or experience, with guys. And if that's really truly the case, then you've got to sit him down. You've got to talk to him and find out what's he struggling with. And then ask him, hey, what do you do best? What do you want to do out on that field? I mean, because, again, if it's confidence he's struggling with, maybe it has something to do with some of the things that they're doing as a team. Or maybe this has got something to do with some of the players on the field. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why things can be not working. And one of the tough things that we had to do as coaches, we have to find out what those problem situations are and then help find the answers.
When you watch Deshaun, do you think there's something salvageable there, or do you feel like it's just a lost cause?
No, I think there's something salvageable there because of his abilities. I mean, he's shown he's got a very good arm. He really does. He's got tremendous athletic ability and the ability to extend plays. For the most part, he keeps his eyes downfield and tries to make things happen. Sometimes it is a matter of also the health of your football team. I know they're beat up on the offensive line. That's a big part of it, too, because there's two things that you have to be able to do and be able to have, and be successful on offense. And that is, you got to be able to protect your quarterback, and you got to be able to have playmakers around that are making plays. If you can protect them, they get a chance to make plays. If you can't protect them, now a lot of crazy things happen in trying to make plays. So that's a big thing, too. So if there are some things that are going on with injuries, guys that aren't playing as well, you know, some things have to change.
Coach, we've talked a lot about fit, right? Deshaun's fit within the offense. The first 2 years, this was very much what it was the two previous years. This was the Kubiak West Coast offense. Mm-hmm. This year, the idea was we're going to move to more of a spread, or we're going to have some of those New England concepts that maybe Deshaun saw in Houston with Bill O'Brien, and it just hasn't worked. And even Kevin as a play caller just doesn't look like the same guy. So when it comes to calling a new offense, how big of a change, like what goes into kind of switching up your offense and like how do you get it right if it's not working?
Well, I mean, again, I don't want to second guess what Kevin is doing. But the hardest thing more than anything else is, again, if you have the players in place, you can do those things. And again, I know – you know, Kevin, in my opinion, is a really bright offensive mind. He really is. And again, it's about, you know, like you said, the fit, the comfort level for the guys. You know, do they have the guys that are capable of it? And again, even after the injuries that they've had, there's, you know, and I know, you know, I'm saying injuries a lot, but that's the truth of the matter, is because it changes things that you can and can't do. And, you know, you'd like to hope and think that your next guy up has that ability.
At 1-4, what would your message be to the Browns if you were the head coach?
One at a time. You got to stay in front of them, take them one at a time. You can't worry about what's already happened. You can only impact and affect what's going to happen now. Go out and play each game that way. Focus in on what's important, not what's interesting. There's a lot of interesting things going on, like you know, everybody around them telling everybody what they should be doing. You know, and unless you've been in that fire, unless you've had to deal with that, you know, the truth of the matter is don't draw a map because you've never been there. So, you know, those are the things that you try to get the guys to understand. And then you got to galvanize them. They've got to kind of circle the wagons. I'm using an old Mike Ditka term back in the day, but circle the wagons and make sure everybody's facing out to see who's coming.
Ron Rivera on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So, I mean, I we gave you a lot of love on the new media roles here, but will you coach again?
I don't know. A lot of it depends on opportunity. Obviously, if there is opportunity, something I got to take a look at. I love the game. The game has been great for me. It really has. You know, this is the first time I've had a break in 27 straight years as a coach. And it's been different. It really has. But, you know, truthfully, I get fired up for every Thursday, every Sunday, and every Monday of football. And it's been really cool to look at it from a different perspective. You know, I see things happening from a different perspective. And, you know, I've taken a lot of notes and looked at a lot of things and just thought, you know, how would I do this? How would I approach that? What would I do? You know, if I was in that situation these guys were in. I mean, you know, it's kind of like you look at what happened yesterday to Robert Saleh at the Jets, and you sit there and go, wow, that's crazy, because they're 2-3, and if they win, if they beat Buffalo, they're tied for first in their division. So, you know, you'll sit there and go, gosh, I wonder what would happen if Saleh had another chance, you know. So there's a lot to think about as far as that's concerned, and you can read into it a lot just because of the fact that being that close to winning, being first in the division, you know, now you wonder what everybody around the Jets has been thinking.
Coach, your friend James Borrego used to tell me all the time about self-scouting. He used to say stuff like that. He said that you and him would talk about that. And I'm just curious, like, knowing that, you know, you're 62 here, you've had two runs as a head coach, do you ever look back on things and say, if I had done this decision differently in either Carolina or Washington, maybe I would have had a different outcome? Or are you content with where things have fallen in both situations?
Well, I know this. In Carolina, the one thing that really true. Well, first, I'm going to say this, just so everybody understands. In this league, this is a quarterback-driven league. If you have a quarterback, all right, that is a big-time playmaker, okay, your success is going to be up there. If you have a good quarterback that is a good game manager that has the ability to take over a game, you're going to have success. If you just have guys, it's going to be very, very hard. So when I was in Carolina, in 2016, unfortunately, Cam Newton hurts his shoulders. And from that point on, he was never really the same guy. I mean, he was still competitive, everything like that, but he didn't have what he had had those first 7 years. I mean, those first 7 years, he was phenomenal. He was as good as anybody in the league. And because of those first 7 years, I really do think this guy should be in every conversation. When you look at what happened there, you know, that was a tough one. So I always wonder what would have happened if he doesn't get hurt. If he stays healthy and is the player that he was those first seven, I mean, he might still be there. I mean, that's how good he was as a player. When you look at, when I look at reflect on my time back in Washington, that was about as tough a situation I'd ever been in. And you know, are there things I could have done different? Yeah, a lot of things that we could have done differently as I look back. But with all the stuff off the field, yeah, I always wonder just how much more success we could have had. I mean, that was a very difficult set of circumstances.
The way you boil it down, I think, is interesting, though. It's like you basically said, if you have a good quarterback, you'll be fine. If you don't have a good quarterback, life's going to be a little tough for you as a head coach. And I think we'd all agree with that sentiment. But then what separates the good head coaches from the great head coaches in your mind?
I think the great head coaches, when they have a good quarterback, very good quarterback, they develop that relationship. But what they also do is they handle and manage the players around the good quarterbacks. Because you can have a good quarterback, but if you can't handle the players around them, you'll struggle. You'll have some tough times. You know, guys like Bill Belichick did it for so long because, yeah, he had a great quarterback, but he also managed and handled the rest of the team. The other 52 guys he had to deal with, he had to handle. You know, you look at what Andy Reid has. He's got a really good quarterback. And look at how he's handling the players around him now. You know, they're down, what, seven starters or something like that, but they've been able to bring guys in, plug guys in. They brought back some guys that were with them before and plugged them back in there as well. I mean, that's what you look for as far as the great ones. They can sustain that for a long time. John Harbaugh comes to mind as one of the really great coaches in this league. Why? Because he's done it for so long. He's done it with two different quarterbacks as well. So that's what you're looking for. Guys that have that kind of success is because, you know, again, they have the quarterback, but they manage everything else so doggone well. That's what's so important, is to be able to manage that situation and circumstances as well as they can.
Coach, great stuff as always. So excited to see you in your media career. You're always so kind to me when I was in Carolina. So best to you, best to the family, best to the pups, and we can't wait to hear you tomorrow night on the call right here on our station.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much, and hey, good luck to your Browns.
Thank you so much. We'll take all the luck we can get. Coach Ron Rivera there on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Again, he'll be on the call for 49er Seahawks Westwood One alongside Kevin Kugler tomorrow right here on 92.3 The Fan. We'll react to what he had to say about the Browns situation next on 92.3 The Fan. Oh, and that was in response to a question about Deshaun Watson's confidence and how do you handle it, whether it's the players or coaches, if it is confidence that is the issue. We do have Todd Blackledge. He's going to be on the call for Ohio State, Oregon on NBC and Peacock coming up in about 15 minutes here. Actually, about 20 minutes here. But I do think, like, you know, Jonathan Allen, that's weird. When like, I understand when somebody's like, hey, I've added a hyphen to my last name because now I want to be Maurice Jones-Drew because I'm honoring somebody.
Sure.
Makes sense. I was Jonathan Allen at Bama and in the pros, and now I'm John. I always worry about that.
I mean, I wasn't the pro, but this is the exact comp that I have right here. In college, I went by John, and then I went back to Jonathan when I became, I'm gonna say a pro, an actual broadcaster.
So, but with respect, like, that's...
John was cooler.
Well, okay, but that's a college thing to go there, and then when it... But, like... pros.
I'll have college friends of mine, and they'll say John still. But like when we talk, they'll be like John, and I'm like, I get it. You called me John at that point in my life. I'm John to you forever.
But this is the thing. He's only become John in the last year. That's where it freaks me out a little bit. He's like a grown man.
What's weird? Did he all of a sudden think it was going to be cool? Like, is that what happened?
Or
Jonathan to John is it's a hard transition.
I do wonder. Was he always John, and he just didn't have the courage to say it?
Sometimes that does happen, as you know.
Live your best life, King, is what I say. But Jonathan Allen was on the Junkies in D.C.
And then you call him Jonathan.
And then it called him Jonathan.
Because the media will do whatever they want anyway.
No. This is Frankie Francisco Lindor all over again.
Exactly right.
Disrespect, but You know, he had said that when he was watching Deshaun in that game, he felt like it was above the head. And I'll be honest with you, that's the only thing that supports benching Deshaun to me. If you think that he is so pressurized and he is so in his own dome that the only way to give him distance is to sit him, that makes sense. But that's a 1 or 2 week ordeal, depending on if Jameis and the team has success.
How are you playing psychiatrist when you're on the field playing against him? I could buy into the idea that you think he's seeing ghosts, maybe. Is that what we're going to go with? Because I can buy into that. You're like, I don't know. There was pressure that was there, but then he was reacting to pressure that wasn't there.
You can tell.
I can buy into that. How do you say he's emotionally cooked in that moment?
If I can see it in the game, instances where it's obvious he's not confident. And again, there were instances in the Raiders game where he was confident. You saw his eyes downfield. So this isn't as if it's like in a vacuum. It's like he's just has no confidence at all. But it does teeter. You can tell he is not even within the Raiders game. There were moments where, whether it was his shoulder, whether it was the protection, whether it was his own playmaking ability, there were moments where he wasn't confident.
There's proof in the pudding in that, obviously. I guess I looked too deep into the emotional side of things, as if he was like getting in his headspace. Like, how do you? Because for weeks I made the case that he went through a 4-day stretch where he lost his father, lost his teammate, then had the worst game he's ever played against the Cowboys, and then had a new allegation pop up where I'm like, he's got to be emotionally cooked. And so maybe I read a little bit too much into that side of things with him. If he's saying confidence, if he meant to say confidence is shot, that's a different story.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think they're interchangeable, right?
Do you? I mean, emotionally cooked versus confidence.
I mean, we're talking about mental health. I mean, I think they're very, very close. And I'll be honest with you.
Maybe I wish he would have just said confident. I don't know. His confidence was shot.
Like, I think this gets back to, this is where, you know, we asked Ron about the overall idea. And like Deshaun today, for what it's worth, said, I don't pay attention to social media. I still don't buy that, by the way. I don't pay attention to outside noise.
The lie detector determined that was a lie.
And mostly because I just don't think it's possible if you're a head coach. Or sorry, if you're a quarterback. If you're this quarterback. I think if you're Brock Purdy and you've had a bunch of really good seasons in a row and your team's won a lot, you're 2-3 right now, trying to get to 3-3 with this Seattle matchup, but I can see how you might go. I don't hear anything. Like, we're fine.
Did you ever believe when LeBron went 0-23?
No, of course not.
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody did, right?
It was just something that got us pumped up because it sounded cool and it was a cool idea.
It was
idea.
A flip the switch type thing. Yeah, all right, good, you did it.
Yeah, no, but it's even more so when you're going through crisis. And Deshaun has been stuck in crisis for 2+ years now.
So if you believe that it was, whether we call it emotionally cooked or whether we call it a lack of confidence, whatever that is, if he got the confidence back in him, if he emotionally above the shoulders was right, does that mean there is life left with Deshaun Watson and reason why the Browns would explore maybe throwing him out there for a few more weeks and seeing if maybe that light bulb goes on? Maybe the confidence does go. And we actually do have something there and something to get excited about.
Yeah, because a win with Deshaun carries more water than a win with Jameis. A win with Jameis, and again, any win is good right now. You just need a freaking win. But a win with Jameis is it's a palate cleanser. And I've made the Andy Dalton in Carolina comparison. But even if you play good for one game, who's to say that those bad habits aren't going to crack back in?
Right.
Whereas if Deshaun is part of the reason that you win, let's say Philadelphia on Sunday, I do think that carries more weight.
But do you see how I think when people first heard that comment, they thought to themselves like, oh no, we're screwed. Deshaun doesn't have it mentally. Deshaun is done. It's everything I think I'm seeing, and he's just confirming it. When in reality, this should be kind of what you're looking for. If you want to spin this season around, then that gives you hope that there's something left with Deshaun still. If he can get his confidence right and then can be the quarterback that you thought he would be. Because that's what that tells me right there.
I just think we're at the point where 99% of people, I think the Stefanski conversation yesterday proves all of this is confirmation bias. This is a Rorschach test where 99% of people have made up their mind on Deshaun. So when you lose, it doesn't matter what the truth is. The Raiders' losses and the Commanders' losses are very different losses in how they played out, even though there are similarities in the lack of discipline, stupid high school-type penalties, of which Deshaun did make some of those in the Raiders game and made almost all of them in the Washington game. It doesn't matter. There is no nuance with Deshaun.
Which wasn't great, by the way, for getting his confidence back to then watching it just get lit up and burned on fire.
Yeah, and I like, it's funny, man. Going into the Washington game, I said, this presents you with an opportunity to gain confidence, to build confidence.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, the Raiders game is that bedrock. You stack another stone on it, and all of a sudden you got a church to build on pretty quickly here. But I do think, like, one of my notes was, it's going to take more than two good games for Browns fans to circle the wagons around Deshaun. I think the problem is now I think it's going to take more than one good game to fix Deshaun.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't feel that way 5 weeks ago.
Just the Eagles game alone, if he comes out and has the 300-yard game we've all been waiting for and is awesome, I don't think that's going to be enough to just say he's fixed. I think you'll still need more with that. For sure you will.
And for himself,
too.
Yeah. No, I mean, whether it's confidence, whether it's – because I just think, like, there's just so much. And it's not even just – because I think everybody just goes, well, it's awful football. There's actually some good football within the 17 first games of his career here. It's just it's not to the level. Because it's not to that level to such an extent, and he's got the shoulder thing. Like, hey, Deshaun Watson says he's ashamed to hear about ditty parties. I guess Deshaun was at ditty parties. Like, I think every single thing that relates to this guy ties back to, you think that people are making all his struggles up, or you think he's cooked and it's over. The Browns cannot think that way. And I think that's what's so fascinating about the are you going to bench Deshaun conversation. Because I don't care if Kevin Stefanski wants to bench him. It's your job. I don't care if AVP was firing was forced on him.
Yeah.
Grow up. You're a millionaire.
The bet the Browns are making, though, is that John Allen, whatever we want to call him, was right. That it is just mental. And he's got it. Once he clears that hurdle, light bulb will go on. You'll go back to seeing an older version of Deshaun that you want to see. I just don't know that we're going to get there, Nick. I think that might be a leap of faith. I don't know that we're going to get there.
I just think the problem is it's not just confidence. Like that, yes, do I think confidence ebbs and flows, and that's obvious when you watch him? No, it's the confidence with the shoulder, which then impacts the confidence, which also, by the way, is the pressure of the contract, which is the pressure of the trade, which is the pressure of you haven't played good enough football
in
Cleveland.
It's a perfect storm of bad.
It is this kind of never-ending Ouroboros that just continues, the snake eating its own tail, just mm-hmm. constantly. And at some point, you just have to get the snake to move in a direction when they're not eating their own damn tail.
Good luck.
And that's just, I don't know the answer there. I just know the answer for this year. I'm not talking about long term, because once we get into next year, we start talking differently. But for this year, I know that benching him only makes the Browns more likable. I don't know what magically makes them more winnable. I don't get you any closer to helping Deshaun be the guy he needs to be. Todd Blackledge, he's going to be on the call, Ohio State, Oregon this weekend on NBC and Peacock. He's next on 92.3 The Fan. Obviously, when that game goes final, you guys are going to hear a lot of that from myself and JP here, but we got plenty to get into. We got Ross Tucker coming up in about 20 minutes here. Still hasn't followed me on TikTok. Not that I'm mad about it, but it's a lot of broken promises with our friend Ross Tucker here. But, we've talked a lot of Browns. We've talked a lot of Guardians. Well, Ohio State, Oregon, a matchup of two and the number three team in the country. It's here. It's October 12th. It's finally here. Our next guest is going to be on the call for Ohio State, Oregon on NBC and Peacock alongside Noah Eagle and Catherine Tappan. It is Todd Blackledge on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Todd, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be with you guys.
Well, it's great to have you on.
How are the Guardians doing anyway, by the way? I'm still a Guardians fan, being my days living in Ohio for most of my life. So how are they doing right now?
So right now they're down 1-0, but I think Alex Cobb is locked in, and I think he's starting to heat up a little bit. So that's good news.
Okay. All right, good.
So I'm excited to have you on this game because, one, I do an Ohio State podcast, Sons of the Shoe, if you want to listen. But we've been waiting for this game for 7 weeks. This is the litmus test, maybe more so than Michigan this year. How do you kind of think these two teams match up heading into this game?
Well, I think it's going to be a great matchup. You know, I think if I had to say, I would say I think Ohio State is maybe a little stronger top to bottom. You know, when I look at them and watch them on film, I really don't see any weak area or, you know, area that would be more vulnerable to exploit than others. And I think Oregon, got out of the gate a little slower than people maybe expected. They made some changes to their offensive line, the interior of their offensive line, and they've been better. In the last 3 weeks, they've played their best football. So they're both playing at a pretty dominant level right now. They both have, you know, outstanding skill people, you know, veteran quarterbacks who transferred in after playing a lot of football other places. You know, they both have excellent running backs. They've got wide receivers. I think both offensive lines are good. And I think you got two very aggressive, dominant kind of defenses that create a lot of negative plays. So it's a very even matchup. I think, again, I think Ohio State might be a little bit better top to bottom. But the Autzen crowd and that energy out there will be real, and I think that, you know, that will be in Oregon's favor a little bit as well.
Todd, I want to ask you about Ohio State's running game. It looks noticeably better than what it was last year. Is that credit to Chip Kelly, or is that the addition of Judkins through the transfer portal?
I think both, and I think the third thing I would add to that is I think the offensive line looks better to me, at least through this part of the season, than they looked last year. You know, I think that they are coming off the ball with more cohesiveness. They look like they're a little more physical, a little bit nastier. And, you know, so I think that that is part of it. I think Chip has done a great job of, you know, schematically, they do a little bit of everything. I mean, you see inside zone, outside zone, counter trap, you see pullers, you see toss sweeps. So a little bit of everything, along with misdirection and reverses to a couple of those receivers that are so dynamic. So I think it's a combination of all those things. And then Judkins, just, you know, you've got two guys that are both home run hitters. You know, a lot of times when you have two backs, they're different. You know, one of them is more of a thunder. The other one's more of a lightning. These two guys are both capable of going the distance every time they touch the ball. So very similar in how they're built, similar in how they play, and, you know, they're kind of interchangeable.
So Will Howard was one of the guys that maybe was the biggest question mark for Ohio State fans,
right,
coming into this. And yet the numbers look pretty good. Do you think, has Will Howard answered every question you had for him about, you know, taking over the Ohio State job, you know, before this game, or is that what this game is about?
I think this game will go a long way. And I think he's answered every question to this point that is out there about him. I think he's been a leader. I think he's been a field general. I think he's brought a maturity and a presence to the huddle and to the offense. And he's done a great job of distributing the football to the playmakers. And then, you know, he's shown his ability as a runner that can add another dimension, particularly in the red zone. They've been phenomenal in the red zone so far in scoring touchdowns, and I think his running ability is a big part of that. But I think now, playing against the best team that they will have faced, clearly on their schedule, the best defense they will have faced, in a hostile environment, you know, the only other place that will rival this will be when they go and play Penn State in Happy Valley. But that's, you know, that's, those are the kind of games for a quarterback where if you go and, you know, can lead your team and keep your poise and get the job done, that says an awful lot about you.
Yeah, Todd, I'm curious, you know, the way that the system is now set up, there's a realistic chance that Oregon and Ohio State could play three times this year. Going into this game, do you think Ryan Day will coach us a little bit differently with that idea in the back of his mind, or does he just sell everything out for this game and this game alone?
I mean, I know that's realistic, but, you know, I just don't think coaches think that way. I don't think Ryan would think that way. I don't think Dan Lanning will think that way. I think that they want to put their best foot forward and do whatever they can to win this game today, because you just never know what next week's going to bring. You know, I mean, just ask Alabama, you know, I mean, after winning a huge game against Georgia and being number one, and then all of a sudden, you know, they get beat by Vanderbilt. But having said that, I'll be surprised if they play three times, that they could. But the interesting thing about where we're at in college football now, both with the expanded Big Ten and no divisions, and with the expanded college football playoff, whichever team does not win this game on Saturday, it's not going to really put them behind the eight ball to still have a chance to win the conference championship or get into the playoffs. So I don't think you coach it. I think you still coach it to win it and put your best foot forward, because it's going to be a real litmus test for both teams and to see where they might need to make some changes or make some improvements. But it doesn't mean the end of things if it doesn't go your way.
Todd Blackledge. He's going to be on the call for NBC and Peacock for Ohio State, Oregon this Saturday. Noah Eagle, Catherine Tapman as well. Todd joining us in the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I am not a Ryan Day hater. I am actually quite a fan of Ryan Day. I know that this is a pivotal season, but yet I got to tell you, I think Dan Lanning is the real deal. I think he's a great head coach, maybe the best young head coach in college football. Who has the advantage at head coach in this game?
You know, I would give the advantage to Ryan just because he's been doing it twice as many years as Dan Lanning has. I do think Dan is an excellent coach. I mean, I know the first time I sat in a meeting with him when he was a defensive coordinator at Georgia, and I was doing a little production meeting. When he left the room, you could just tell. I mean, this guy is going to be not only going to be a head coach, he's going to be a really successful head coach, and he has proven to be that. I mean, he's the whole package. I mean, he's a great recruiter. He's a great motivator. He's got energy. He's young. He's got a young staff. And they are playing at a high level of football. And he comes from that same, Alabama, Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, Georgia tree to where they know how to build a championship caliber program. So I think he's excellent. But also, Ryan has coached in a lot of big games. And I know people want to say, well, he hasn't had a great record against the higher ranked teams, but he's coached in big games. I did the game last year in South Bend. That was a big game. That was a high stakes game that he was involved in. He was on the sideline that his team was playing in. And so I just think he's had more of those kind of experiences, both home and away. And so I would give him a little bit of an edge in that regard.
Dylan Gabriel, he kind of struggled against Michigan State. He's kind of had a weird start to the season. Transferred over, obviously, the NIL comes in play there. They expected big things out of him. What's been going on with his year?
He's had a really good year. I know you say he struggled a little bit, which he did. And the struggle that he had was he threw a couple interceptions early in the game, but more disturbing or more, alarming when they were both in the red zone. So, he's thrown three interceptions this year, just like Will Howard has thrown three interceptions, but all of Dylan's have been in the red zone. And those are the kind of mistakes that, you don't want a young quarterback to make, let alone somebody that's playing in his sixth year of football and has played as many games as Dylan has played. So other than that, he has played well. I think he's completing 77, 78% of his passes. He's thrown a bunch of touchdowns. He's also run for touchdowns. So his numbers, stats are almost identical to Will Howard's through this first part of the season. But the interceptions in the red zone is something that he has to really try to eliminate.
Todd, we've got the Red River rivalry coming up this weekend. 3:30 kick, number one Texas going on the road against number 18 Oklahoma. Feels weird to say, big SEC matchup. How you feel about this one for both teams who, as of right now, have significant not just playoff aspirations but national title aspirations?
Yeah, I would look at that one and probably even more so than as I look at Ohio State and Oregon and say I think Ohio State's a little better. I think Texas is more than a little bit better than Oklahoma right now. I think they're the more complete team. Regardless of whether it's Quinn Ewers playing or Arch Manning playing quarterback, the rest of their team, that's a complete football team, a very solid football team. But that's a great game. I don't know if you've ever been to it, but I've had the privilege of calling that game three or four times in my career. And, they played at the Cotton Bowl, and the stadium is – there's hardly any games like this anymore. I guess Florida, Georgia is like this, and Jacksonville and Army-Navy is like this at the end of the year, where the stadium is literally 50% burnt orange and 50% crimson, for Oklahoma. And it's just it's really an awesome atmosphere and awesome intensity in the stadium. And of course, the rivalry speaks for itself.
Unfortunately, I'm not allowed back in the state of Oklahoma, or I would absolutely love to go. Todd, great stuff. Can't wait to hear you guys on the call. You're the best. Thank you so much.
You got it. Take care, guys.
Todd Blackledge there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Do you think you believe me?
Well, it's at the Cotton Bowl, so Texas is the state you need to be talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Let's go up here.
Fact check. One, no. Two, three, mm-hmm. maybe.
One sec. I'm scrolling.
Yeah.
Please scroll. Please scroll.
Keep scrolling. Scroll faster.
So it is.
So, hey.
I'm also not allowed in the state of Texas anymore.
There we go. He was just really nice about
it. Below the Mason-Dixon line. No Nikki Dubs.
You, me. We go to the game, and then we go to the Texas State Fair afterwards.
Mm. Is there?
I want to eat a corn dog at the Texas State Fair.
Sounds very suggestive. Good
it seems
Lord.
Really on the point. Like I've been thinking about a corn dog at the Texas State Fair for a long time.
A lot of people do that. Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider, next on 92.3 The Fan.